Hola, bienvenido al 2021. Bienvenida. Todas sus voces son muy importantes y también las de nuestros invitados e invitadas. Yo te invito a dar clic todo el tiempo que tú quieras a este podcast específicamente dedicado a la gastronomía mexicana y principalmente a los destilados, fermentos y productos de agave en México y en el mundo. Muy bien. Estoy muy contenta, estoy sana y yo espero que tú también te estés cuidando y cuides a los demás. Bienvenidos a Agave Lessons 2021. Esto es Agave Lessons en español y también será en inglés porque tenemos como invitada a la doctora Hyun-Hee Park desde Nueva York y yo le doy la bienvenida. Vamos a hablar hoy de la historia del soju en Corea. Ella es una distinguida historiadora que trabaja desde el 2014 con esta historia y ha podido terminar un libro al 2021 contando la historia de esta bebida tan importante para Corea. Hi, Hyun-Hee. How are you?
Hi, Anna. Hi, it's so lovely to talk to you again. I have thought of you often since 2015 when we first met in Salzburg for the conference, the comparative investigation of distillation technologies. So you remember the conference was organized by our colleagues, Professor Angela Schottenhammer at University of Salzburg at the time and Dr. Paul Buer. So thank you so much for this wonderful opportunity to introduce my new book through this podcast interview for your wonderful blog.
Thank you. Of course, I remember very well in Salzburg, but before I remember you when we were writing in distance this paper from 2013.
Ah, that's true. Yeah. Yes. So we wrote the paper before we met.
Before.
Oh, wow.
So I know about you just by email, and it was in Salzburg, our meeting.
Right.
And then it was unforgettable because we were speaking about history, about alcohol, so many things in Asiatic distillation. Thank you so much for your lessons and your special meeting in this area. So let me know what are you doing
so
for a long time ago.
Yeah. Oh, so
I know that you are a historian, but let us our listeners, who are you? Speak about you.
Okay, thank you. And just before that, I would like to thank you for your great support before we met and in Salzburg. And yeah, so as for who I am, so first of all, I'm currently an associate professor of history at the City University of New York. It's John Jay College and the City the CUNY Graduate Center. As you can guess from my last name, I'm originally from South Korea, the country of soju's origins. After receiving a BA in history from Seoul National University in 1997, I went to Israel where I studied for a master's degree in East Asian Studies at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. And next, after completing that degree, I moved to the US in 2001 to study at Yale University, where I completed my PhD in history again in 2008. And I have now taught at John Jay College for 13 years in New York City. And maybe a little more about my research.
My
doctoral dissertation, later published as my first book, explored medieval contacts and exchanges between the Islamic world and China, utilizing geographic and cartographic information, including ancient maps. So if you are interested in ancient maps that are quite different from modern maps, you can have a look at that book too. Yeah.
So, what is the name again? The name of your first book?
It's Mapping the Chinese and the Islamic Wars. That's the main title.
Wow.
And about like pre-modern cross-cultural context.
Yes.
While preparing this book, my research focus gradually expanded to encompass other kinds of information and technology transfers. At that point, never in my wildest imagination did I suspect that I would write my next book on the history of alcoholic drinks. But I was so intrigued by the topic of technology in general and by the cross-cultural context and the transfers involved in the development of soju and other spirits like tequila and mezcal too within the context of global history. So you and Paul invited me in. As I've written in my book's acknowledgement section, my confrontation with the history of distillation and distilled liquors produced a kind of eureka moment for me. So I learned that alcohol has been much more important in our lives than we yes. usually expect and imagine. So here is a great topic that has engaged me so much for these past few years.
Let me tell you something. You will prepare in technology and history of technology and history of Asia and also mapping with Iceland. So you were the perfect person for this project, for soju.
Well, I thought so. I think not many people can write this book because, well, this is soju, a global history, and it involves not just Korean materials, but Chinese and the connections with the Islamic Arak. And technology, because mapping and geographic understanding, this issue involves technology, the cartography and those things involve technology. So yeah, I was very interested in that. And alcohol, the distillation is another very interesting and very important technology.
So let me know more about your all this moment that you realize that you needed to do this book and how to do it and how to go there, to travel, to look for support, all your experience about this book.
So yeah, it was Dr. Paul Buer, our colleague,
yes.
who first introduced me to this topic in the history of alcohol, especially to the history of spirits, distilled liquors. At the time I first met him, you, Anna, you are collaborating with him in your comparative distillation project. So I first received an email from Paul in 2013 inquiring about soju, the national distilled alcoholic drink of Korea, and its origin and distillation methods. Frankly, I did not yet have much information about all these topics. And I was surprised, actually, you and Paul knew about soju.
Yes.
You know, I know soju in Korea, but I didn't know even it was known in other countries. So it was easy for me to Google relevant information about the soju gori, a traditional Korean still used to make soju. And I sent it to Paul, and Paul passed the information on to you. You are the real expert on the topic. And you replied that the Korean steel is an East Asian style steel, and it is worth comparing it to other steels used in East Asia and also Mexico. So, well, yes. I remember Paul and you were excited and asked me to join your project. Yeah, so I was so glad to join as a participant who could contribute information about Korean soju. I was sorry that Western scholars like Joseph Needham and his colleagues had not treated Korean soju for their
yes.
comparative research about history of distillation in their magnificent volumes, you know, Science and Civilization in China.
Yes.
Yeah, it deals with cases of Japan, Southeast Asia, and India, but not Korea. So,
no.
Yeah, so this was because few studies on soju were available at the time.
Why?
Only few in Korean, too. So when I began, I really did not intend to write a book on the history of alcohol because it's completely a new topic for me. So at the time, I only planned to co-author articles with Paul and you to discuss soju from a comparative perspective. And so we wrote this article together. I think you are the main author, and I just, assisted about the Korean part about this Huichol steel article, focusing on Mexican distillation. But suddenly a colleague of mine, Professor Tan Ten Sen at NYU, recommended my project for a new Cambridge University Press book series called Asian Connection. So, and he thought my book fits well into the series. And I agreed that I should write a book about soju by combining relevant topics such as food history, alcohol, Korea, the Mongol Empire, and global connections.
What interesting that is.
Yeah, it was a good decision.
Which month and do you remember? Did you remember the time exactly about your decision?
Oh, well, it's 2000. That's a good question. I think it's just a second. Yeah. So you can cut this
don't
part,
worry.
Right?
I
think it's 2014.
14.
I think it was 2014 when I visited Berlin. There was a conference at Max Planck Institute, and Paul was there, and I also met Tan Ten Sen there. It's good to remember the moment.
Yes, that is important because you had the idea in this moment, and we are in 2021.
Yeah.
So many experiences did you have now?
Yes, and to tell you a little more, actually, Tan Ten Sen asked me if I could finish it in 1 or 2 years, and I said, that's too fast, but I said, I will do my best to try it in 2 to 3 years, but it took longer time, because at the time, I thought there are a lot of studies in Korean, and I thought maybe it would be just important and good contribution to introduce Korean studies to English. But I realized that there are not many Korean studies, I mean, that really thoroughly examine this topic. So I had to trace all the primary sources from the beginning. And it became more and more bigger because I wanted to compare it with Mexico and Japanese shochu and Iran and the Middle East. So I'm very glad I finished this. But I think it took longer time, and the project itself became bigger. But I think it was good.
So how long time it took exactly?
So, exactly. Paul invited me to the project. Paul and you invited me to the project, I mean, in general, in 2013. So, and I decided to write a book in 2014. So, five to 6 years, or
yes,
less than 7 years. But I think it still, I did it quite quickly because I had the support from my colleagues like you and Paul. Without your support, it was truly impossible to do that. And a publisher was interested in this project. So,
7 years, 7 years, your
book. 6 to 7 years, okay.
So let me know more about your experience, about your travel, about your, what happened with you with this book?
Since I decided to write the book, I gradually accumulated materials and consulted experts when I was in the U.S. in New York City. But I was in Korea in 2015 to 2016 for my sabbatical year. But that was not enough. I was engaged in other projects, and I applied for another funding. So in 2017, I received the Korea Foundation Fellowship for field research in Korea to visit libraries and museums to collect relevant materials and interview important Korean specialists. I began to make a major effort to learn about the different soju brands, both traditional and industrial. And I also carefully tasted them to compare Korean soju with other spirits like whiskeys, vodkas, and mezcal, and tequila. There are so many. So in my book, But I try to focus on more like technological, technical and practical aspects. So how to make spirits with higher alcohol percentages, how the technologies and different distillation methods developed in the first place were transferred to other areas, in particular historical context, and how that developed further locally there, like Korea, once transferred. So I became very interested in the fact that alcohol has also been really significant in human lives as medicine. Yes. Yeah, not just for drinking it for fun. So I was really fascinated by the fact that it was easier for people to preserve and transport distilled drinks than simple fermented wines or milks in the pre-modern period. So imagine when people didn't have a refrigerator, they were able to keep alcoholic drinks by distilling it. So this factor increased the popularity of distilled alcohol over time. So I thought that even those who do not drink much alcohol should know that these spirits, including soju, have influenced our lives more than we might commonly expect.
Oui, yes.
Yeah. And I was also attracted to the overall topic because of its global connections. So my book's title is Soju, A Global History. And so it, as I talked a little earlier, my book's introduction starts with soju's connections to similar spirits like Chinese Shaozhou and Japanese Shochu, and even to Middle Eastern Arak, Mongolian Arhi, and Mexican Mezcal and Tequila. So I discussed Mezcal and Tequila in the book's last chapter to provide a comparative connection and possibly connective approach. So both soju and mezcal and tequila share roots in traditional distillation technology developed in pre-modern Eurasia. So
great.
Yeah, and thank you so much for reading my draft of chapter 6 about Mexico. I was really grateful. I was able to fix some errors, and of course there are, if there are errors, that's all my fault.
Yeah, it was an honor.
Yeah, so do you want me to talk a little bit more about my book?
And yes, because yeah, the first one chapter is an immersion about the different types of spirits, but also a comparison. But what about other chapters? Let us know.
Yes. So actually, chapter one was really difficult. I had to read all these theories all the theories and new theories and try to give really the most convincing understanding and assumption about all this, because we cannot have absolute answer, but until we can have better evidence. And there are a lot of archaeological sources that need more studies. So in the book's first chapter, I just set the broader historical context in which spirits rose, and I emphasized the roles of the Mongols. So the Needham, Joseph Needham and his team, they did an excellent work on the development of technology, but they didn't perfectly succeed in connecting the technology development to kind of historical changes. The most important thing is the rise of the Mongols. And actually, it's our colleague, Dr. Paul Buer, who began to argue that the Mongols are the key people who diffused the technology. So the Mongols didn't invent the technology itself, even
but they spread.
So we discussed, China and Mesopotamia and ancient Greece. They developed some, basic technology of distillation, even though they didn't distill much alcohol. But the Mongols, because they were the Mongols of the 13th and 14th centuries, they were drinking a lot of alcohol, and they were using alcohol for their rituals. So And they were moving a lot for their the military expeditions, and they yes. had such a huge empire, including Korea as a part. So it was very important for them to adopt the distillation technology from the Chinese and some other peoples. And then it's the Mongol period when we began to see the rise of the first documentations about Shaozhou or Arak, the distilled liquors.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
so that is very interesting. I think Needham colleagues and also students, they are going to be very happy reading your book also.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah. But really, the foundation is their work. Yeah.
Yes.
In chapter one, I wanted to I redraw a diagram of all the different steels that Needham and his colleagues and Huang Xinchong, the scholar who wrote a really significant volume about distillation in China. So it was very complicated, very sophisticated.
Yeah, it's very complicated.
Tried to simplify this so that even people who are not experts of the topic could understand basic development of the steels. So coming back to your earlier question, so then after chapter one, chapter two, then I began to talk about the history of alcohols in Korea, because my book had to show like when soju began to rise. And so so there are different theories, but I argue that when we looked at the documents in Korea, there are several documents, very interesting documents written in even before the Mongol period. And they talk about alcoholic drinks, but most of them are fermented rice wines. So they don't have high alcohol percentage. It's more like fermenting alcohol, and then sometimes for the nobles they strain it so it become more clear. So it's clear strained wine. It's similar to sake, Japanese sake. Yeah, it doesn't have high alcohol percentage. And for the ordinary people, it's more like a turbid wine. It's a little milky. It's similar to modern Makgeolli. So it's becoming also popular in other countries, and that's good for health. That's what I heard. Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, but anyway, so there's no evidence that shows that distilled spirit existed before the Mongol period.
So before the Mongol period,
The Mongol period overlaps with the end of later part of the Goryeo dynasty. So Goryeo dynasty is one of the dynasty in Korea, and before the Joseon dynasty, and the English name for the country Korea is from this dynasty, Goryeo. Not many people know that. Yeah, so Goryeo dynasty and especially during the Mongol period, even before the Mongol period, Goryeo was quite connected to the wider world internationally, and especially during the Mongol period, it had a lot of contact with the Mongol Empire. So it's not just the Chinese, but even the Middle East and India, there are records that show Koreans had contact with these people, because the Mongol Empire covered such a broad area. Stretching from the Pacific to Hungary. So
we are speaking with about the what age? That is
13th and 14th
century.
So Korea became a part of the Mongol Empire. So the Mongols invaded it, and the Koreans were defeated. But most of the Eurasia was under Mongol rule. But the Mongols actually allowed a lot of autonomy to Korea. So the Korean kings were ruled, even though they had a lot of influence from the Mongols. And at the time, a lot of Korean scholars and merchants also traveled to the capital city of the Mongol Empire, like Beijing, modern-day Beijing, Daidu, and also a lot of Mongol soldiers. This is actually the previous theory. The Mongol soldiers brought their distilled liquor when they invaded Korea, and then also when they were preparing to invade Japan further that.
Wow.
So we have some records that show that soldiers were drinking soju, and some scholars also talk about one interesting episode about scholar wrote a poem about arak, actually not soju or shaojo, but arak.
Interesting. Arak.
Yeah, and then he describes it as a distilled liquor. Exactly. Yeah.
We are speaking. Do you remember the year of this moment?
Oh.
Do you remember the date? What year was this when the soldiers were drinking this alcohol and thinking about Japan invasion?
It's all 13th and 14th century, the Mongol period.
Any date? No, it's just in this period.
Yeah,
no, any date? Don't worry. It's because I'm imagining.
Uh-huh. Yes, and Anna, so it's not just soju that the people brought from China and the Mongol Empire to Korea, but there are other cultural aspects and
yes.
other foods like beef. The Koreans were Buddhist mostly before the Mongols. Yeah, so they didn't eat much beef, but the Mongols, you know, they eat a lot of beef as a nomad. And they brought this beef eating culture, and the K barbecue in Korean restaurants is very popular. And some people say soju is stronger than earlier alcohol. So it was perfect context that soju became more popular. So, yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, if you watch some Korean dramas, people gather in Korean restaurants and they eat Korean barbecues along with like soju.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so chapter 2 and 3 talked about this the first development of soju in Korea, and then in chapter 4 I focused more on the localization. The Joseon dynasty had some connections with other countries, but it's more like isolated, and but still the soju developed locally and in a very distinctive manner. And people in Joseon dynasty used the soju for many things, for medicine, of course, for drinking, and as a gift. So when the foreign envoys come to Korea, or when they dispatch envoys to other countries like China and Japan, then the soju was in the list of the gifts, along with silk, gold, and other luxurious items. So, yeah, it seems like soju became quite popular quite fast in the Joseon period. And chapter 5 actually explores the immense transformations that soju has undergone in the contemporary period. So this is very important. During the period of Japanese colonial rule in the first half of the 20th century, new industrial distillation methods were introduced to Korea from Japan that fundamentally led to the mass production of an industrial soju.
Which year or era is that?
It's like from 1910 to 1945. That's the independence of Korea from Japan. So after the end of the Japanese colonial rule in 1945, and then there was a Korean War from 1950 to 1954. the Korean government supported factory manufactured industrial soju made from potatoes instead of its traditional ingredient, rice, because they lacked grain and rice was so expensive. So only in the 1980s did the government begin to promote traditionally distilled soju as national folk liquor. It's part of its policy of promoting national culture. So
yes,
the traditional soju available to us nowadays is the one revived at this time. And Anna, have you tasted so you can cut this, but so with these developments underway, producers began to export the mass-produced industrial soju to other countries in the long run, making it a global brand. So the soju then made Korean soju popular globally in the 21st century is this mass-produced industrial soju. So so many people who know soju probably know this soju. It has less alcohol, only around 20%. Compared to a traditional brand that has more than 40% of alcohol,
like 40%.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we can see both, and the distillation methods are different.
Yes.
And, I think like real soju lovers like you and your spirit lover like you, and so I think you prefer traditionally distilled soju. Yeah, because its taste is softer. Yeah, but even the factories, the modern soju factories and companies, they try to make industrial soju tasty, yeah, by bringing some technology. So that, yeah. So anyway, so soju made of rice, and the book's last chapter, chapter 6, established the base from which to extend our examination of soju into the future, using the comparative cases of Japan and Mexico. So it first discusses the spirit known as shochu, Japan's counterpart to soju. They use similar Chinese characters. So this chapter tried to explore the possibility that transfers of distilled liquors and distillation methods occurred between China and Korea and Japan. And the chapter also extends our comparisons to a more surprising place, Mexico. So yeah, it's your area. So, you know, anthropological field research done by a great scholar like you, it points out the resemblance of local steels to East Asian types, suggesting the possibility that Afro-Eurasian distillation methods influenced alcohol development there, both before and after the arrival of Europeans. And do you remember, Anna? So when we were working on the articles, we were so surprised that the steels in Mexico and those in Korea were very similar. So
in another areas of Asia, yes.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. So I yes. Thank you for allowing me to add the photo of Mexican steel that you took, so in my chapter 6. Yeah, so when I was preparing my manuscript, in fact, some readers said that the discussion of East Asian steels in Mexico might be too much for this book, but I still believe that the topic is essential because it provides an avenue to discuss distilled liquor's history from both connective and comparative perspectives.
Yes.
Yeah. So where the Korean steels did not influence Mexican steels, I believe, but the case of Korea suggests ways in which the East Asian steels may have influenced distillation in other parts of the world, like Mexico.
And you were speaking about the future of the soju. So what is the future for soju?
The future of soju, we don't know, yeah, because it changes so much over time.
Yes.
So
yes.
Yeah, I think, so that's very interesting. In many foods, we see there are different kinds of foods, and they always evolve, and based on, you know, different historical contexts. So I really like the part, and we don't know how big changes soju will have. And actually, in chapter 5, I also talked about American soju made by American distiller called Toki soju. Yeah, so in Korean restaurants in the U.S. we can find it, and I also heard that in Korean restaurants in Korea they
some who prepares of them, that?
Yeah, and actually the factory was in Brooklyn, but they moved the factory to Korea too. So it's made by American, and
yes,
he said that he used traditional technology to make Korean soju. So they use machine, but the machine follows the traditional technology. And many other Korean traditional brand soju that revived in recent years, they also use machine, but following the traditional distillation methods. So using fermented rice wine, and then it's very different from industrial soju that combines ethanol and water and flavors, so the taste would be softer also higher percentage of alcohol. So I truly enjoyed soju, studying soju history and writing my book about it. While it is known as a Korean spirit, we can trace back the origins and spread of the relevant distillation technology from the ancient times in Eurasia. Continuous developments of still technologies in various societies in Eurasia throughout history, and the spread of spirits in the globalizing world. So this topic also suggests how much present societies owe to the long-term developments and the exchanges of the past. And I believe understanding this helps us overcome potential nationalistic traps of our age.
Yes.
So yeah, to avoid claiming that ours is the best, where they are connected to each other. So I love eating some Korean foods, but I also love enjoying other cultural foods like Italian pasta, and I love margarita cocktail based on mezcal and tequila. So I hope we can nurture a balanced understanding of how our food has developed and also how our current food culture will inevitably continue to change in many other cultural elements in our global society through cross-cultural exchanges of ideas, technologies, and in our global world. So finally, I try to write this book from objective perspectives as a global history. But yes, as a native Korean, I wanted my readers to be interested in Korean culture and history while enjoying its food. And I also wanted my fellow Koreans to see Korean history in terms of global history, of which it has been part.
To do some comments for the new readers of your book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important for scholars in distillation when they can see not just alembic, if not another type of alcohol devices. And many of them, those devices were developed more in Asia and spread with Mongolian Empire, and also going from the Asia years of the colonialism in Mexico. In any case, it was not Mexico, it was Nueva España, New Spain. Yeah, so New Spain received not just Filipino stills, no, received many ideas from Asia. And this connection, I think we need to put more focus. And your book and our work with alcohol, Americas, but I think also there are other readers for your book, people who is very interested in foods and beverages, but also in cultural food, just soju from America. We can see now that there are agave spirits now in the state. So
yes, exactly. Wanted to convey the message. So
we can see the same with whiskey from Japan, whiskey from America, like a bourbon, whiskey from France, and whiskey had an origin in Scotland.
Yes.
Yeah, so
yeah, exactly. Thank you, Anna. Yeah.
So I think there are many readers, different profiles for your book, and also your Korean colleagues, and also your, I think, in Asia, this connection with alcohol, but with also with food fermentation, and I think it's interesting because, you know, probiotics and prebiotics are almost finished in our natural food, cultural mm-hmm. food.
Yes.
So I can see in your book many sides, and I think many readers, different readers. And I will be very happy to read each chapter and discover the different readers and different lines of research that you could be doing in the next future.
Thank you so much. Really, I cannot thank you enough for your great support and all these inspirations. And yeah, without that, it would have been impossible for me to write this. And yes, yeah, I look forward to our next projects. Yeah, so I really wanted to say I truly enjoyed studying Soju's history and writing. Yeah, and I really hope to see you again soon after the pandemic situation improves.
Yes. Yes, Hanhee, of course. We need to eat something together and drink soju with you and
yeah.
speak more about your history.
Okay,
thank you so
great.
Much,
thank
Dr.
Hanhee
Park. Congratulations for your book. And I am happy to see how many things are for a new discover in soju in Korea. Mm-hmm.
¿Te gustó la entrevista? Síguenos. Estamos en las redes sociales. Yo soy Ana Valenzuela y me encuentras en agavelessons.com. También en Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. Tendremos más personajes. Déjanos tu voz. Mándanos un mensaje por esta plataforma. Nos seguimos y nos encontramos nuevamente. Hasta pronto.